Amy Goodman. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hey, this is Craig Lubon. Thank you for joining us here on Radioactive Magazine tonight and on this Christmas Eve. So happy holidays to all of you as well. My guest tonight is John Wiley, and he is a real estate investor, but part of that he does buys properties and rehabs them. And one of the properties he purchased, or his organization purchased, was to establish transitional living. He purchased the old Park Lane Hospital, and the organization is called River of Refuge. Welcome, John.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on this Christmas Eve.
So, first tell us what your organization does. What is River Refuge?
Well, River Refuge offers it's a simple program with a high impact for families. The families that we serve are literally families, so children have to be involved in the family unit. And when families move into the program, transitional housing, typically they're coming from pay-by-the-week motels where they've been staying for 4 or 5 years on end, or sleeping in a car, or in some state of homelessness. And in order to come into our program, again, children have to be involved in the family unit. There has to meet an adult with a job, because we're not a permanent shelter. It's transitional housing. So when they come in to our program, they eat and live for free, under a condition that they keep their job and open a savings account where we verify their weekly deposits. So rather than paying motel rent, they're saving for themselves. We verify those deposits, teach them life skills on budgeting. So in the end, when they graduate from our program with their own money, they've saved first month's, last month's security deposit, 60 days of cash in the bank for unexpected expenses in the future, and we get them out of the verge of homelessness or flat-out homelessness into a stable living situation.
All right. Is there a period of time that they have to be in this semi-state of homelessness before they can move in
here? No, we take every family based on an induction interview to verify the need, but there's no predetermined amount of time that you have to be in crisis. Clearly, if we can see that you qualify, then you're going to be able to come into the program.
And are there other services that go along with this, companion services like job training or some kind of skill training?
There is. We do provide some. There's a lot of great organizations in Kansas City that provide very detailed training for jobs and whatnot. When we bring families to live inside of the former hospital that we've remodeled into beautiful 3- and 4-bedroom apartment units, fully furnished and kitchenettes and all of them. So if you can imagine placing families living in close proximity, so we offer communication classes, budgeting classes, parenting classes, and different life skill classes. They're all voluntary. They're not mandatory. The only mandatory program is the budgeting class, that you're going to come in and learn how to manage your money a little bit better. But other than that, that's the only specific training we offer.
And if these people, assuming they meet the criteria initially and they have a job, well, first of all, if it's a family, do all of the adults have to have a job or just one?
No, just one. One member of the family's got a verified income so that we know that they're employed. There's lots of programs out there for unemployed folks to get on their feet. So we wanted to find this niche. The niche for us is where children are involved. What I discovered years ago, 15 plus years ago, was that if you had children involved in a state of homelessness as a married couple, there are some organizations that can provide very limited housing at that time, but there was no one set aside to address homelessness to keep a family intact as a dedicated facility. There are a few rooms available. So we established the River of Refuge to keep families intact. We're the, as far as I know to date so far, we're the only organization that will allow a single father with children to come into a program. As best I've known up to, unless it's changed recently, if you're a single father and you're in a homeless state, you are not able to enter most or any program except ours that I currently know of.
And you say single father. What about if it's a family with single mother?
Well, that's easy. Lots of single moms can find programs around Kansas City to get in, but it's been really difficult for a single dad trying to make a go of it to find a place where he can get some relief. So our program allows for that.
And why, if you know, why are single fathers put at, if you will, a disadvantage over single mothers?
I would be speculating at that juncture to speculate as to why other organizations do or don't. I don't believe it's malicious or anything like that. I would guess, just speculating, for them it might be of security reasons or concerns. But because we've rehabbed this hospital and repurposed it very recently, mm-hmm. we have wonderful tracking of cameras and security, and every door's card read, and we know who comes and goes, and we feel like we've provided a very safe environment for our family units.
And where is this located?
We're in the old former Park Lane Hospital, and some folks may not know where that is exactly, but you can see Arrowhead Stadium from our facility. So we're right there on Raytown Road where it takes the corner and bends toward the stadiums. Yeah.
All right. What about a lot of homeless families have drug issues, and so if they qualify initially, what programs do you have that you get them involved in to address drug issues?
Well, we are not a drug rehab facility, mm-hmm. and so we're very clear on that. So we have, homeless families as well as families with homes all can have drug problems, So there is a stereotype that goes out there that says, if you're homeless, if you have a drug problem. And we fight that stereotype somewhat. I find the mix to be about the same. So to answer your question specifically, though, we don't offer in-house drug treatment program. We're not tooled for that. Mm-hmm. There's great organizations that are. So therefore, we have a zero tolerance on drugs. So when you come into our program, you have to agree that you're drug-free, and you're going to stay drug-free while you're in our program. If there's an infraction, it's up to our executive director to decide how to handle that infraction. There may or may not be a grace given. Just depends on what happened. But we have a very clear no drug policy. We run our facility on a civility for all. So you have to obey by the community rules and have civility and be drug free.
Is there some kind of mandatory drug testing?
We do on the spot drug testing, yes, and we'll screen folks as they come in, mm-hmm. and then while they're in the program, the executive director may choose to do a spot check.
Okay. Tell us what the transition is to go from semi-homelessness to stability.
Yes.
How does your program compare with other transitional programs?
That's a great question. I don't know because I don't study the stats of other organizations, mm-hmm. Because I don't feel like I'm in a competition. I'm not trying to beat out another organization, so I'm not avoiding your question. I would be mm-hmm. speculating wildly to say how mm-hmm. I how I compare. I know that a moment ago I indicated a difference with our organization as far as single fathers are concerned. I can tell you we have some other unique nuances. We have a 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom units, apartments that are set aside for these families. As far as I know, we're the only organization in Kansas City with 3- and 4-bedroom apartment units for families. You know, we our families, part of the program that we provide is, I'll get you some stats here. We when our families come in, not only do they save, but we require that they pay back debt while they're with us, that they address debt. And I pulled some recent stats for the last 3-year period in anticipation of our interview. So over the last 3 years, our families verify that we've seen paid back over $65,700 of debt. That's not savings. That's money paid back to former landlords, to the power company, to the water company. So not only are we providing them the opportunity to save their money and graduate with, you know, that step up, but we're also encouraging them and requiring them to give back into the economy and pay those obligations. We've also, in the last 3 years, our members, we call them family members. They're not our clients. We call them members. So our members have saved in a 3-year period $144,000 of savings. These would be the numbers upon graduation from our program.
How many units do you have?
We have 12 units. 10 of them stay active for the families we serve. A couple of the other units are there for the on-site resident manager, because someone's there all the time. That's a big facility, former hospital. And so we have many floors that are dedicated for future build-out, and we're ramping up in 2020 to open 10 more units. And mind you, all that, the acquisition of the hospital over 10 years ago, the money to rehab those, as well as all of our operating overhead, is all done with donation from right here, local citizens in Kansas City. We've not received federal or state assistance in that regard.
And you mentioned some of them, or most of them, are 3- and 4-bedroom units.
We have 2-bedroom units and a few 1-bedroom units.
So, I'm trying to think how to best phrase this. So we don't get
ahead.
A lot of phone calls, but...
Well, it's radio, it's raw, it's real, it's live. You know, we're not recorded, so go for it.
So if you have somebody needing 4 bedrooms...
Sure.
Is there anybody that works with them on family planning issues?
Yeah, no. And I know where you're. I understand. I'm asked that frequently, especially when I give some of the stats that where our families have come from. For example, I'm going to change names. So I'm not giving you real names. These are real life circumstances of folks, but I'm changing the names to protect my members. But Ken and Bonnie came into the program recently, a family of 8, who came from a motel. We call them our $75 family. They literally came into our program, a family of 8 with $75 to their name. Now, that's a blended family. So, you know, it's not that necessarily they needed family planning as much as in this day and age, you may have a remarriage and one spouse has 3 and the other has 2 or 4 or whatever that blend is. And then all of a sudden you've got a family of 8 or 9. I think the largest family we've ever brought in at one time, my memory could be wrong, I think it was a family of, I want to say 10, it might have been 12.
Yeah. Some people are going to wonder, I mean, if you have a large family like that.
Yes.
And so you've got all these expenses with children. What percentage of these families are able to for lack of a better way of saying it, dig themselves out of the hole.
Well, that depends
they
on
have that many children.
Yeah, that depends on their income earning capacity and their education. You know, I remember when this program, River of Refuge, first got started, before we even acquired the hospital. Mm-hmm. I remember, 3 years prior to the acquisition of the hospital, meeting a family. This was right after the 2008-2009 mortgage meltdown. And I met a man at a motel with his three children who were sleeping on the motel floor for almost a two-year period. He's a former Sprint executive. Mm-hmm. You know, so people can fall into hard times that have earning capacity, but they can't catch a break, you know, for whatever difficulty.
Yeah.
Health reasons, divorces. These are people who need to catch a break. And so we're there. There's not, you know, life is tough sometimes. And so if we tried to pre-qualify and make everybody fit a mold in order, you know, to come in, we've got to allow for that. You have how many kids and how did you get them? But at one point you just have to go, okay, this is where you're at. So let's help you given the circumstance, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay. You mentioned divorce.
Yes.
One of the things. If a family qualifies and they move in and then they get divorced, how is that typically handled?
You know, I don't know if we've had that exact scenario of an actual divorce. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had family units move in and one of them decides they don't want to stay in the program and another one does. We've had that happen where, because our program is tough. When we say they're accountable for their money, literally every penny they earn, if you're going to come into our program and be there and live and eat for free, and you earn $500 a week, hypothetically, we are working with you, and you're accountable for every dollar of that $500. We get to know where it went, mm-hmm. you know, while you're with us. What did you spend it on? And they're accountable. Some spouses don't like that. They don't like that accountability, and they'll leave, and another one will stay behind and graduate without. What happens to the marriage beyond that, we've not gotten involved that deep.
And you said there's 12 units.
Yes.
10 of which are active.
Correct.
When they come in, what is the timeline? How long can they stay, and how long do most of them stay?
Great, great question. Most say, on average, 6 to 8 months. But that's not a hard and fast rule. So how we come to a graduation date, it's a matter of mathematics. So on the once they've been qualified to come in, then we'll sit down and do an intake with their budget planner. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a matter of saying, okay, you earn this much, and they have to give us full disclosure. You owe this to, you know, what is it now? It's no longer KCP&L, whatever it is now. Evergy, I think. You owe this to the gas company, this to the electric company, in order to get first month's, last month's security deposit. We do all the math, and we get that big number that they need. And then we divide that into their earning capacity. And then that we then forecast those weeks out. And then we're able to say, oh, okay, based on all this, to hit the goal, that means on X date, you'll graduate. So if it's a year, it's a year. If it's 9 months, it's 9 months. And that's how we decided to set up our program. What I'm about to say may have changed, but upon the founding of the River of Refuge, I think, if I'm correct, we were the only organization with that flex date. The other organizations that are similarly aligned to ours they run great programs, but they would give, okay, you have to be in and out in 7 weeks, regardless of, you know, where you're at. So for me, it was like taking somebody to the 5-yard line, you know, to the end zone, and then quitting the game. So we decided to flex our program based on the desired goal.
And approximately how many families apply to get in, and what percentage are actually accepted then?
I don't know the answer to the last question. Yeah, but I can tell you that we have hundreds of inquiries every month, hundreds. and we turn away far, far, far more than we bring in with only 10 units. I'm anxious in 2020 to open the additional 12 more units on the second floor. Matter of fact, that second floor above us, we've already got all of the plumbing is pre-run and everything's kind of ready to go. The cost of that will be a lot less than the first floor. But we turn away a lot of families just because we're at capacity most of the time. And when we do have to turn someone away, our staff is trained to help find them somewhere else to go. So rather than getting a no, they'll get a no, we can't help you here, but let's help you go somewhere else. And we'll try to hand them off rather than just hang up the phone.
The when they apply, no. And, well, let me backtrack a little.
Sure.
You said your goal was to open another 12 in 2020.
Yes.
And when you say to capacity, is that capacity of how many units total that you could put in there, or just how many that's actually been rehabbed so far?
Just based on what's been rehabbed so far. The reason we're turning so many away is I only have 10 units. If I had 20 units, mm-hmm. I still wouldn't meet the demand. But, you know,
okay.
We want to start saying yes more than we have to say no.
So what I'm getting at then is that in terms of space, physical space,
physical space,
how many could you put in?
Last time I checked with an architect who's on our board and just looking at the potential build out, you know, we've looked at various layouts over, mm-hmm. you know, what we could do. But at one time, I think we had an apartment count up to, I think 62 was the last number that I'd heard that we could get to.
So there's, I don't have my calculator, at least space for an additional 30 that you could put in ones you're already doing.
We have so much room.
How many floors is that building?
Well, let's see. It's actually two buildings. One built in the 70s, which was the original hospital. It's five stories tall. Mm-hmm. And then the doctor's facility built in the 80s, and that's where we're currently housed, is in that facility there. So it's a 20-acre facility. Sits on 20 acres, and so much room there. You know, more than we need, honestly. I can't imagine what it would be like to build all that out. Maybe I'll live long enough to see it, you know. You know, we acquired the hospital simply because we were already helping the families. I mm-hmm. was helping five or six families at a time that were living in motels, but I was sponsoring them while they lived in the motel. So if you can imagine sponsoring a family out, but the children still sleep on the floor, you know, the asphalt parking lot's their playground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what really moved my heart kind of going back was what moved me to, you know, raise community awareness and get the hospital rehabbed was I remember one time meeting a family at a motel, and they'd been there for 3 or 4 years, and we were taking them food once a week and went to the motel, and they were gone. And I thought they had maybe gotten a place, mm-hmm. and one of the families a couple doors down said, oh no, they ran out of money this week. They couldn't pay the rent to the motel manager. So they're sleeping in the car in the parking lot so their children can get on the school bus every morning. And that so captured me, so captivated me, that the family, the parents, were so dedicated to keeping their children enrolled in a school that they would, so that on Friday when they get paid, they'd pay for the motel and go back into the room. And I thought, man, I can do something about this. And that's ultimately what gave birth to the idea to rehab that hospital.
And before you got into real estate,
yes,
were you doing some kind of work, like social service work of some kind with families?
Well, you know, I was on the streets at 15. You know, I come from a hard childhood. you know, a loving mom, but, you know, multiple marriages and on the streets at 15. And I saw that motel life and, you know, I just, you know, I'm street smart and had come along enough in life and, had been involved in helping people. You know, I've come to understand that, regardless of skin color, ethnicity, or socioeconomics, we're really all connected. So to help somebody and to love somebody is to you know, to do what's right. So I guess I'm kind of answering your question by saying I'm just one guy, right? But I get a vision for something, and I'm not trying to make a name for myself. I'm just trying to help people, and so. I've got a long history of doing odd things to help people, but not for the purpose of being noticed. Mm-hmm. Just doing it because I should.
Are there other people in your family that work with you on this? Or?
Oh, well, you know, over the decade plus of the River of Refuge, you know, all of my three children have been involved and a lot of my friends and business associates, you know. But, you know, I've never been on the payroll. I've never received or earned a dime from that. I'm the founder, you know, and I'm on the board of directors still currently. But, you know, it's been, and we have amazing board members that serve. We've grown to, last I've checked, I think 17 board members now from various aspects of the Kansas City area.
I understand that it's about 6 to 12 weeks waiting period.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
It's accurate. Okay. That moves according to demand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, six or so weeks.
And what do these families do? Are there other programs that help them in between until you have an opening?
Yes, there are other organizations that can have some temporary housing for a week or two, and we'll make those calls. Hey, if you can take them for 2 weeks, then we can place them for 8 months. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, have some collaboration there. You know, every situation seems to be unique, though. Sometimes we have to get creative, and in order to make something happen.
And what is the website?
At riverofrefuge.org. riverofrefuge.org.
Is there anything that I haven't addressed yet?
Well, you've asked some great questions, some unique questions that because we have more time, right? Usually I come in and do 5-minute spots and then out the door, but you know, you allowed me to share more, you know, about the backstory of the family sleeping in their car. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's a compelling, you know, story. I think that sometimes we forget that what I'd like to bring out is it's the small things we do that matter. You know, people. I remember one family. In order to acquire the hospital, I had to come up with $30,000 as a down payment. We bought the hospital for $1 million, and it had been vacant for 10 years. And during that 10-year, I was on the board of aldermen in Raytown. Actually, I'm a former alderman from the city of Raytown when the hospital was shut down. And then it went vacant for 10 years. And during that 10 years, vandalism and a lot of break-ins, and then we purchased it. We were in the middle of the rehab, and I remember a family came, and this lady who I know her well, she brought me $10,000 she had gotten from an inheritance from her mother, and gave all $10,000 to me to give to the River of Refuge. You know, she gave it because we knew each other, and she knew of the program, and we weren't open yet. It took years to open that facility. And I remember a couple times when we didn't think we'd make it, literally not get open. And I remember, man, people have given me like their inheritance and just carrying that weight and that burden. Mm-hmm. But from all the little bit that everybody did, we opened the river of refuge. It's not what John Wiley did or what any one individual did. It's what we did. And so if someone's listening today, whether you give to City Union Mission or you give to the River of Refuge or you give to the United Way, that little bit you do, it matters. It moves the needle. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people feel like, well, I don't earn that much, or I'm not a millionaire, or I have needs too. But I've learned that what you give out of your need, that which you need the most, if you first seek to give it away, life kind of brings you back what you need. Right? So
we are out of time.
Yes.
For those who have just joined us, I've been talking to John Wiley. He's the founder of River of Refuge.